It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly fair skies, 32 degrees, west winds at 7 miles per hour at the airport, where they are also reporting 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for today and tomorrow, partly sunny skies on Wednesday, mostly sunny skies on Thursday and Friday. Nice warm temperatures throughout that period, with highs in the mid to lower 40s, overnight lows in the mid 30s. Light winds throughout the period. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak History Museum has hired a new executive director. And the Alaska legislature will vote this afternoon on whether to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of the bipartisan education bill. Plus, Friday was the final day for the Arctic Winter Games, which is about more than just games.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Gang violence appears to be escalating in the Haitian capital. Two affluent neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince were attacked before dawn. The Associated Press and Reuters reports more than 10 bodies were located near those targeted communities. Gang warfare has overwhelmed police, is crippling the country's infrastructure, and fueling a humanitarian crisis. The sound of hundreds of displaced families in Port-au-Prince fighting to get cooked meals distributed by the World Food Program, whose director warns that 1.4 million people are a step away from famine. NPR's Ada Peralta has been monitoring developments from Cap Haitien, where he reports on how residents are forced to find ways around a government infrastructure failure just to survive.
I spent some time in the rural part of town with an older lady. And she said in the old days, they didn't need the government because they could grow their own food. But climate change means it's not as rainy as it used to be here. And it means that in order to grow food, you need irrigation. And that's not something Haitians can do on their own. A government has to drill wells.
NPR's Ada Peralta reporting. The UN warns famine is imminent in northern Gaza following 5 months of war between Israel and Hamas. Today, President Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The White House says the Israeli leader has agreed to send a team of military, intelligence, and humanitarian officials to Washington in the coming days to hear U.S. concerns about the Israeli military operation proposed for the southern Gaza city of Rafah. Lawyers for former president and presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump say coming up with a bond on roughly $500 million while he appeals his New York fraud judgment is a, quote, practical impossibility. NPR's Andrea Bernstein reports Trump is on the hook for persistently lying about the value of his assets.
Trump's lawyers say they've approached 30 companies through four brokers, and none will accept his real estate holdings as a guarantee on the bond for $454 million. They argue the judgment is unconstitutionally high and filed an affidavit from an insurance broker saying it's not possible to find a bond that big. The broker was an expert witness for Trump during the trial. The trial judge already noted in his decision that this broker was, quote, a close personal friend of Trump's and had a financial interest in the outcome. A decision could come from the appeals court later this week. Andrea Bernstein, NPR News, New York.
Tom Stafford, one of the astronauts from NASA's early days, has died at the age of 93 after battling a long illness. Stafford flew in space four times. He commanded Apollo 10, the mission just before the first lunar landing. That crucial flight was the dress rehearsal before Apollo 11, which landed on the moon 2 months later. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up. It's NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak History Museum hired a new executive director after months of searching. Kristen O'Lear, the new executive director, is bringing over a decade of experience in museums to the job. She arrives on the island in May.
And I am so excited to be in this new role and to move to Kodiak and just get to know the community better and really invest myself in the organization, but also the larger, broader community.
O'Lear is on her way up from Southern California, and she says she's excited to bring her experience and learn from the community when she gets to the island.
There's plenty of ideas that I have that I think could probably mold well, but KHM is obviously a different organization, and they have a wonderful staff who's already doing wonderful things. So my first, bit of time there, it's really getting to know staff better, getting to know the organization better, really understand from a staff perspective and a board perspective where they want the organization to go.
Her predecessor left the job in July of last year, and it's been a long road for the Kodiak History Museum's board to find a successor. Since all of the board members are volunteers, they decided to sign with a hiring agency, the Foraker Group, to help find credible candidates. Toby Sullivan became president of the board when the previous president stepped down to be the museum's interim director.
And we wanted to look within the community first, but if we didn't find the ideal candidate, we wanted to also be able to look outside the community. And we didn't really have a process for doing that.
Sullivan says the board opted to outsource the search to Foraker Group, which helps Alaska nonprofits find staff. After some talks with O'Lear, they decided to fly her up to meet the staff before finalizing their decision.
We're looking for someone that would be able to live in a community with a lot of different kinds of people from different backgrounds, ethnic and indigenous and everything else. And she really hit the marks on all of that.
O'Lear says she plans to drive through Canada in the next month and arrive on the Tustamina in time for summer. The Alaska legislature plans to vote this afternoon on whether to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's 11th-hour veto of a bipartisan bill that would have significantly boosted state funding for public schools. The governor announced his veto on Thursday night, just hours shy of his constitutional deadline to act on the education bill. Dunleavy defended his veto in a news conference on Friday. He says it's clear lawmakers are not interested in passing his education priorities, namely large teacher retention bonuses and a new process allowing the state school board appointed by the governor to directly approve new charter schools. He had previously threatened that if legislators didn't move these proposals forward, he'd veto the education bill.
The fact of the matter is, the legislative process got close, but doesn't have these measures in there that the people and the children of Alaska really need.
He says he believes additional funding will materialize for public schools at the end of the legislative session, just as it has in prior years.
It could be 400. It could be 500. It could even be 700. I doubt that. But the point I'm trying to make is because the bill is vetoed doesn't mean there's not going to be money. There's going to be money. It's going to happen.
That leaves districts in a tough spot, says Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican.
My real concern right now is how are the districts and the boroughs that are also responsible, how can they plan when they're not going to know until May?
The legislature will need 40 out of 60 votes to override the governor's veto. But even if the veto override does succeed, Dunleavy could still unilaterally reduce state education funding with a line item veto after the session ends. Friday was the final day of the Arctic Winter Games, which were held across a wide swath of south central Alaska from Hatcher Pass to Wasilla and Palmer, all the way down to Eagle River and Kincaid Park in Anchorage. The games attracted more than 1,700 athletes from six Arctic nations here to win medals in the shape of an ulu, a curved Inuit knife. But as KNBA's Rhonda McBride found out, this was a sporting event that was about more than just winning medals.
Some call the Arctic Winter Games the Olympics of the North. But the Dene Games and indigenous Arctic sports are what make this a one-of-a-kind event.
That's always been really amazing to listen to, just to hear your indigenous languages, especially in a space that's meant for indigenous people.
Marjorie Tabone has been involved in the Dene Games for 20 years, and now she's a coach.
Just being able to come together with international friends and cousins has been so motivating. It warms my heart.
It's very emotional.
Judah Eason from Kenai won a bronze ulu in the finger pull, which puts hand strength to a test. But he was more excited when elders awarded him a medal for fair play.
That's the heart of these games, more than anything else. The ability to mentor others and win and lose graciously and build each other up as a community.
Are you going to watch the hockey game?
Yeah.
Yes, that's what we're here for.
Then you probably want to head for the back corner where the elevator is.
Okay. Yeah.
Jack Tim and his wife Kathy are among 2,000 volunteers. The Wasilla couple says with so many people involved, they're surprised at how this mega event has run like a well-oiled machine.
There's so much positivity just flowing through this building.
And for Jack, it brings back old memories.
The kids are exactly the way I remember when I was in the games. They're here to do a job.
Jack won a silver for cross-country skiing and says it's been uplifting to see young people gather together to be their very best selves. Sometimes that comes with a little disappointment, like Team Nunavut from the far eastern Canadian Arctic. They were knocked out of the semifinals and had to settle for a bronze. But Luke Joy says it was far from a total loss.
We all came together as a team and started communicating together, and we just found our inner peace.
For Crystal Ludit, a hockey mom from the Northwest Territories, her son's team was definitely the underdog, but she says it's good for them to face tough competition.
We don't get a lot of chances to play competitive sports because we're pretty isolated. The nearest town is 2.5-3 hours away, so to be able to come here and compete is amazing and a good experience for the boys for sure.
Northwest Territories had to settle for a silver ulu after Team Alaska bested them with an 8-1 win. On Saturday, the 2024 Arctic Winter Games will come to a close, a time to acknowledge that everyone wins when they can go home, knowing they played their best. In Wasilla, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And Buddy Streeper has won his 10th Open North American Championship Sled Dog Race. That happened in Fairbanks yesterday. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The defending champion from British Columbia bested 21 other teams with the fastest combined time over 3 days of racing, 20-mile heats on Friday and Saturday, and a 28-mile finale Sunday. Streeper was tested by Open North American rookie Remy Cost.
You know, Remy is one of the fastest teams in the world, nearly sets track record day one, and we anticipated him to do that. We just needed to stay close.
Streeper was 40 seconds down to Cost going into the final day of racing.
Just a really close race and a real chess match.
Streeper says he used split times and a GPS to ultimately pace his team to victory on day three.
Honestly, I had a lot of gas. I didn't need the big gas pedal, but it was great. Had a great run, and the dogs really rocked.
Streeper says he's suited to the Open North American, which allows mushers to run as many dogs as they want.
We always call it the Canadian Express. That's what our team's called, the Canadian Express. You hook a big, long group of dogs together, and it's a good team, and so it was part of my strategy.
Streeper ran 14 dogs on day three, while Cost ran 8. Cost, a Frenchman who lives in Sweden, says he doesn't have as many dogs as some other mushers, and running fewer on day three was a disadvantage given fresh snow.
The trail is more soft, the slide is not very good, so I think with more dogs, it's better.
But Cost still placed ahead of Quebec's Annie Malo, who ran 12 dogs on day three to finish third. With 10 Open North American victories, Streeper is now just 2 short of Egil Ellis, the winningest musher in the event's 78-year history. The next stop on the sprint mushing circuit is this coming weekend's Toke Race of Champions, where Streeper is also the defending title holder. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Trident Seafoods announced in a press release on Friday morning that it will sell its Petersburg processing plant, bunkhouse, galley, and two housing units to E.C. Phillips & Son, Incorporated. E.C. Phillips & Son operates year-round out of Ketchikan and Craig and was established almost a century ago. Trident announced in December it was selling four of its Alaska-based plants in the wake of turbulence in the Alaska seafood market. Trident CEO Joe Bundrant says Trident's former employees and fleet might enjoy a longer season under the new banner because E.C. Phillips & Son is, quote, more focused on variety and direct distribution, end quote. Bundrant also said their approach could stage Petersburg as a great processing hub in Southeast. Trident Seafoods and E.C. Phillips & Son expect to close the deal on Petersburg's facilities sometime next month. The details on how the sale might affect the upcoming fishing season are unknown. Spokespeople from both companies declined to comment further on the sale.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
Throughout the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, Yupik dance and drumming all but died out at the turn of the 20th century, as Christian missionaries sought to suppress what they saw as the pagan tradition of dance. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, now each year the Kamai Dance Festival celebrates the elders and culture bearers who have helped bring the tradition back and keep the practice strong.
79-year-old Joe Asiluk Sr. had the Chamai crowd in stitches as he accepted his Living Treasure Award. The Tuxuk Bay elder did a complex series of handshakes and fist bumps with presenter Linda Curta, dropped into a flamboyant bow with his new plaque, and picked up a pair of feathered dance fans to stage a brief and spectacular Yurok performance to the nursery rhyme, This Old Man Came Rolling Home.
It's our traditional from way back.
Asiluk Sr. says at first he didn't feel like the right person for a Living Treasure Award. He says he feels pretty new in the long history of Yurok, with a lot left to learn.
Well, you know, when I first heard, I was kind of embarrassed because, you know, to me, I'm not that much of a man. Oh, and I'm human, to be honored, you know. But then when I thought of late traditional J. Paul John, what he used to tell us, you know, be present. If someone asks you, you know, don't refuse.
Asiluk Sr. says he accepted the award thinking of how younger generations might be motivated to continue in Yurok and become living treasures themselves.
I thought of my younger people, you know, looking at me and as an example.
Yurok is deeply important to Asiluk Sr. He says Yurok is like medicine and can lift a person out of a dark place.
When I lost my grandson through the suicidal, that Yurok was lifting me up, you know, really. I used drum and sing along with them. And also, when I had cancer, 2007, I was joining the groups. Even though I had a cancer, I joined them, you know. Here I am, still alive.
Asiluk Sr. was the sole living treasure honored in person, but was far from the sole honoree. Each year for decades, the Chamai Dance Festival has dedicated the dozens of hours of dancing, drumming, singing, and celebration to elders who have passed on, and honored living treasures who keep the beat of Yurok thriving in the Delta. The first evening of the 2024 Chamai Festival was extra full of those sentiments, as the festival committee chose to honor two deceased elders and two living treasures. It's been more than a decade since Chamai honored two living treasures in the same year. Chiang Mai coordinator Linda Curta says it isn't a scientific process. Dedications and living treasure honorees often come as the committee discusses the theme and dives into planning the next Chiang Mai festival.
We always find our living treasures and our dedication in the Delta. It's not a state or a national or international. It's us. It's right here. It's Bethel and it's the communities that are coming to the festival. And so I just listen. And literally, the answer comes. And that's how we choose. It's not very scientific, but it is what it's supposed to be.
This year, Chiang Mai dedicated the festival to the late Stanley Anthony of Nightmute and the late Bob Aloysius of Bethel.
One person is on the committee. It was her father, Bob Aloysius. And so she felt a little kind of, should I even consider suggesting it? And once she did, we were all absolutely yes. And then Stanley actually died since we started planning Chiang Mai. And so it was just, and his community was already coming. So it just was yes.
For this year's Living Treasures, Curta says the committee started out with the idea of honoring Levi Hoover of Kasigluk.
We honored the whole Kasigluk community as Living Treasures in the past. And he was one more that we wanted to honor. And then Joe Asulik Sr. It was the right time.
Levi Hoover of Kasigluk was unable to attend Chiang Mai this year, so his family accepted the award in his place. Curta says that while Chiang Mai started out with dedications, the addition of the Living Treasure Award since the 1990s has become an important way to say thank you to the people and communities who carry Yorok forward.
I mean, for those folks who come now to the Delta, I would say that it's hard, and you see all of this, it's hard to remember that there was almost no dance. I mean, we had, in the early years, if we could find 4 to 5 dance groups and communities dancing, you know, and now it's the entire Delta.
After receiving his award, a living treasure, Joseph Asulik Sr. took to center stage, sitting amidst the generations of Tuksuk Bay dancers as their dance fans flew up and down with the beats. It's his favorite song, Asulik Sr. says. He loves the motions. The song brings him joy. Plus, he says with a laugh, it's an easy one. In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
AstraZeneca is capping out-of-pocket costs for inhalers. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The price cap is $35 in the U.S. It takes effect June 1st. AstraZeneca is following in the footsteps of rival Boehringer Ingelheim amid pressure from Washington over prescription drug prices. Supermicrocomputer became part of the S&P 500 index today. The company makes servers used in artificial intelligence applications. Its shares have nearly quadrupled this year alone. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby says the company is reviewing safety practices after a spate of incidents, including a tire falling off one jet and a missing panel on another. That last one occurred Friday. The FAA is investigating. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 18th day of March, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:14. It will set again at 8:21. That will give us 12 hours and 6 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 49 degrees set in 1935, and a record low was 2 set in 1999. Currently 32 degrees here in Kodiak. We have west winds at 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility out at the airport. And the Weather Service is reporting mostly sunny skies, and look for mostly sunny skies tomorrow too. Partly sunny skies on Wednesday, mostly sunny skies on Thursday and Friday. Chance of rain for Saturday, and rain is likely on Sunday. Throughout this sunny period this week, though, look for light winds starting at the west today, finally becoming completely calm through tomorrow. Tomorrow it'll turn to the south and come up to 5 or 10. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will happen at 4:54 this afternoon, just about 5 p.m. That will be a 1.2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:03 a.m., just after midnight, of 5.2 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 5:12 p.m. and be 2 and 1/3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 12:19 a.m. of 9 feet. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. West wind to 20 knots, becoming southwest 15 tonight on our east side. 6-foot seas subsiding to 4 feet tonight. For tomorrow, southwest, southeast winds to 15 knots, becoming south 15 tomorrow night. 5-foot seas building to 7 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, west wind to 20 knots today, becoming south 15 tonight. 5-foot seas subsiding to 4 feet and finally down to 2 feet after midnight. For tomorrow, on our west side, east winds to 15 knots and seas to 3 feet, becoming southeast 15 with 3-foot seas tonight, tomorrow night. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Tuesday, March 19th, there's 3 meetings. At 1 p.m., the Solid Waste Contract Committee is having a regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. At 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board is having a budget public hearing in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. And at 6:30 p.m., Service Area Number 1 Board is having a budget public hearing in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On Wednesday, March 20th at 6:30 p.m., the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And on Thursday, March 21st at 6:30 p.m., the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is having a Grief Recovery Method 8-week grief group. Learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss, while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. This will be done in an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. The next class is at Thursday, March 21st, between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Pre-registration is required, and you can register at www.hpck.org or call them at 907-512-0600. The Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op and Kodiak College's Kamai Club is welcoming Tim and Lisa Myers of Myers Farms in Bethel for a short presentation, a short video presentation, a community discussion, and a Q&A with the farmers. That's happening Thursday, March 21st at 6 p.m. this Thursday at the Kodiak College, and popcorn will be provided. Myers Farms seeks to provide quality, fresh, local, and affordable produce to Bethel and the surrounding communities. Myers Farms uses a variety of environmentally friendly methods to grow healthy crops without relying on synthetic pesticides or herbicides, keeping consumers and the environment healthy through sustainable practices. To learn how they do that, again, that's this next Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Kodiak College, and there will be popcorn. The Choose Respect March for 2024 is happening Wednesday, March 27th. Alaskans ending the epidemic of domestic and sexual violence. Join the Choose Respect initiative to encourage the formation of healthy, respectful relationships and promote a culture of no tolerance for domestic and sexual violence. Help share the message of hope and healing by marching with us and receive a free hat or water bottle while supplies last. Begins and ends at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium parking lot. Again, that's Wednesday, March 27th. And it starts at 12 p.m., free entry. Mm-hmm.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.